It's time for Ruination Repeat, recapping last week's shows.
I'm not the only one who could use a little bit more of a big fatty.
Oh, dear Gussie, dear Gussie, dear sweet Gussie.
Welcome to this week's Ruination Repeat. I'm King.
And I'm Gail.
So imagine, you know, organizing a junk drawer. You pull it open, and sitting right next to, like, a completely mundane, heavily audited $35 grocery receipt is this custom 3D printed artifact of human connection.
Right, the profound and the pennies just sort of rattling around together.
Exactly. And today, we're exploring the audio archives of the Big Fatty online universe. Specifically, the week of August 24th through the 28th, 2026.
It's quite a week.
It is. Our objective here is to figure out how one person flawlessly balances, you know, the absolute absurdity of real-world socializing with the really ruthless mathematical metrics of domestic couponing.
Oh, yeah.
But before we get our hands dirty in that junk drawer, we have to mark your calendars for our first mandatory listen reminder of the day. Big Brother is on Sunday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights on CBS.
Yeah, that is basically the rhythmic heartbeat of the week. You simply cannot navigate this archive without knowing the television schedule.
Absolutely crucial. So instead of starting with the grocery receipts, let's have a look how this week is physically anchored. The host has a weekend visit from Daniel Bieber and Cricket Hat.
Right, so real-world social dynamics are converging on his physical home base.
Yeah, and the recounting of this visit is incredibly specific. For instance, there's this moment where Cricket Hat utilizes a puffer, gets what is clinically described as glazy eyes, and just dissolves into giggles over supper.
And notice the absolute lack of judgment in that recounting. Bruce reported almost as like a localized weather event.
Yes.
A guest arrives, a puffer is deployed, the atmospheric pressure shifts, glazy eyes are achieved, and you know, precipitation in the form of giggles commences. It's just part of the weekend's climate.
I love that framing, a weather event.
Yeah.
And the culinary climate is just as extreme. They take a trip to Paige's Okra Grill, which Crooked Hat hilariously assumed is spelled O-K-R-Y.
Like a bakery for okra.
Exactly, like a bakery. But I am genuinely stuck on the host meal's meal choice here. He orders the banana pudding, chicken, and waffles.
Which is just a staggeringly chaotic combination of food groups.
It sounds structurally unsound. I mean, it's a standard waffle accompanied by two fried chicken bazoons, which is the archive-specific slang for breasts.
Right.
And they're breaded and crushed vanilla wafers. Plus, it comes with a side of banana pudding that you have to, like, manually apply yourself to control the sweetness ratio.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he actually ends up bringing half of it home because the sheer mass of it is just too much to conquer in one sitting. But here's the part that gives me emotional whiplash.
Okay.
They pair this incredibly heady, decadent, almost cartoonish brunch with a visit to the International African American Museum in Charleston.
Yeah, the contrast there is severe. You're moving from a meal breaded in vanilla wafers directly into this minimalistic, deeply sobering institution designed to confront the heaviest realities of human history.
Exactly. And my instinct is to view that as tone deaf.
Yeah.
But then right after the museum, they go buy Benny Wafers, you know, those regional thin sesame seed caramel cookies.
Oh, yeah.
And they head back home to play a campy 1960s board game called Mystery Date, which Crooked Hat manages to win twice.
Naturally.
So help me understand how a person pivots through those extremes in a single afternoon without getting, I don't know, emotional vertigo.
Well, think about how you compartmentalize your own weekends, right? Life doesn't politely separate the profound from the frivolous. The whiplash is kind of the point.
Right.
The archive treats the museum visit with immense respect, noting its engaging minimalism, but it doesn't allow the weight of history to paralyze the present day. You confront the heavy realities of the past, and then you survive the weight of that by returning to the tactical joy of sesame cookies and vintage board games.
Ah, okay.
It is a very deliberate emotional regulation strategy.
That makes the digital community updates make a lot more sense, actually. Because he uses a very specific emotional regulation strategy when tracking his listeners' milestones, too. And I have to admit, I find this particular terminology incredibly jarring. He doesn't say happy birthday. He clinically refers to birthdays as exiting the birth canal.
It is fiercely biological.
Fiercely. We hear the Dilly Willy Betty, who listeners know used to live nearby and host literal lines of gentlemen callers, is now out in Portland at a place called Rainbow Acres.
Right.
He mentions PNS Noah, the 2026 number one fan, famous for taking artsy naked photos under a kilt. We get a shout out to Short Bus, and he notes the anniversariums for Brandon and Alex and Gavin and Jim.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to push back on this phrasing. Why does a community that is so intimately bonded, so heavily invested in each other's daily lives, rely on such sterile medical terminology like exiting the birth canal for something as sentimental as a birthday?
Well, think about the societal baggage attached to a typical Hallmark birthday card.
Sure.
When someone hands you a card with a cake on it, there is this invisible weight. It forces you to think about aging, the passage of time, expectations versus reality, and ultimately, mortality.
It's a guilt trip wrapped in an envelope.
Exactly. So by using a highly clinical, almost absurdly biological phrase like exiting the birth canal, you completely neutralize that saccharine heavy sentimentality.
Oh, I see.
You strip away the emotional baggage of aging and reduce the event to a biological fact that was successfully achieved decades ago. It's a psychological shield.
And he desperately needs that shield because the week isn't just birthdays and anniversaries. He also has to report grounding, somber moments. He casually mentions the passing of Miss Dolly Hortensia and a lady from Shady Pines.
Yeah, the reality of an aging community. By maintaining that clinical detachment, he can acknowledge the loss, honor the individuals, and document the shifting landscape of his social web without letting grief completely capsize the broadcast.
Right. But maintaining this sprawling, chaotic social web, you know, managing the grief, tracking the milestones, hosting guests who get glazy eyes, it requires immense energy.
It really does.
Which brings us to the domestic sphere. If the social calendar is the Wild West, his home is the absolute microeconomic center of control. Let's talk about the frugal fortress.
Yes, the transition from the uncontrollable outside world to the heavily audited domestic interior.
Audited down to the penny. We get a play-by-play of his Wednesday grocery haul at Vaughn's East. He spent exactly $35.18, and he saved exactly $25.47.
Math is paramount.
It really is. And his Bido, buy one, get one, acquisitions are legendary. He secures family-sized nut butter cookies, Triscuit crackers, thick-cut smokehouse hickory bacon, Kanaku smoked sausage, and Cento American singles.
Wow.
He is stockpiling all this highly specific meat and cheese to prepare for Friday's grand event, the Big Meat Breakfast.
It is an acquisition strategy. He isn't just shopping. He is fortifying the perimeter with cured meats and discounted dairy.
But even inside the frugal fortress, there are breaches in the perimeter. He experiences retail friction because his Eggland is Best eggs didn't ring up on sale.
Oh, no.
And his solution to this is fascinating. He talks about metaphorically deploying Turniped's orange hat persona to go complain and secure his discount.
Right. And for those trying to visualize this, Turniped is a reference to a deceased father figure known for being strict and uncompromising. So channeling the orange hat means putting on that grumpy, authoritative armor.
Right. But I'm hung up on this. If he is so obsessed with maintaining a peaceful, fortified home base, why is he expending the emotional energy to channel a grumpy, deceased father figure just to argue with a cashier over a $2 egg discount? It seems exhausting. Is this really about financial necessity?
Not at all. It has nothing to do with the $2. It is entirely about enforcing universal laws.
Universal laws.
Yeah. The outside world is terrifying and unpredictable. Friends move away. People pass away. Guests get glazy eyes. But inside Vaughn's East, the rules of mathematics are supposed to be absolute.
Okay. I see.
If an item is marked on sale, the register must reflect that reality. When the egg discount fails, it is a glitch in the matrix. By putting on the orange hat and demanding the correction, he isn't saving money. He is manually wrestling the universe back into alignment.
He is manifesting control over his immediate environment. And we see that same intense desire for control in his hardware runs. He spends his expiring Kohl's cash on bamboo cutting boards, specifically to avoid plastic splatters in his kitchen. Then he uses a 10% Lowe's discount to buy outdoor water heater insulation and green twisty ties.
And why does he do that?
To create a literal tree girdle for his yard.
He is physically binding nature.
Yes, he is putting a girdle on a tree to force it to grow in the exact direction he wants. But for all his mastery over the grocery budget and the landscaping, there is one perimeter he can't fully secure, and that's his own biology.
The ultimate uncontrollable variable.
Which brings us to biological maintenance. He has a highly successful trip to, quote, El Dentisto. He is thrilled because he has a new, non-judgmental hygienist, and he gets a clean bill of health with zero cavities. And the irony is not lost on him that this happens on National Banana Split Day. But the real biological highlight of the week comes from a listener letter submitted to the Ask Big Fatty segment. A listener named Shy Tom writes in from Arizona with a story that perfectly contrasts with the host's strict domestic control.
Oh, Shy Tom's letter is a masterpiece of vulnerability.
It is a disaster.
Yeah.
Shy Tom schedules a visit to his dermatologist for a full body check. He drives to the clinic, he gets into the room, and he realizes he completely forgot to wear underpants.
Oh my gosh.
He went entirely commando. And because he was lacking that one crucial layer of fabric, the young female assistant and the male doctor couldn't actually perform the exam. The logistics were impossible. They just had to send him home.
Picture the juxtaposition there. You have the host meticulously calculating a $25.47 grocery savings and physically girdling a tree to ensure proper growth.
Right.
And on the other end of the spectrum, you have a listener whose entire medical infrastructure grinds to a halt because of a single catastrophic failure in wardrobe execution.
It is the ultimate biological glitch. It proves that no matter how much you plan, if you forget your underpants, the system fails.
Yeah, it totally fails.
So, with his physical fortress secured, his teeth cleaned, and his listeners thoroughly cautioned about dermatological attire, the host finally has the bandwidth to manage the intellectual borders of his community. This brings us to the bureaucracy of the SSQD.
The so-so question desk. This is where the community really gets to flex its pedantry. It acts as a digital courtroom where the host gets to play judge and jury for the most mundane aspects of daily living.
And the docket this week is packed. We have Mr. Cackle inquiring about the exact mechanics of changing bed sheets. He wants to know if the rotation schedule should be based on the level of what they clinically call fouling.
Fouling, wow.
Yeah, and this spirals into a massive tangent about the great mystery of the washing machine filter. The host openly admits that in his 70 years of life, he has never actually seen this mythical filter.
It is a brilliant observation on the hidden mechanics of domesticity, though. We rely on these massive appliances to sanitize our lives, but we remain willfully ignorant of their internal anatomy.
We just trust the magic box.
Yeah.
And the rulings continue. Tim Kamal writes in to ask about eggs. Now, the host takes a very firm legislative stance here. He declares fried eggs to be entirely vile.
Vile.
Yes, vile. If he orders a breakfast muffin, he demands the egg be completely removed. But he strictly clarifies for the record that he is not an ovophobe.
The distinction is vital in this universe.
But why? Why does he need to legally clarify to his listeners that he doesn't have an irrational psychological fear of eggs? He just thinks they are gross.
Because in the frugal fortress, definitions are the foundation of reality. An ovophobe is someone controlled by an irrational fear.
Right.
The host refuses to be controlled by anything, let alone poultry products. By legally defining his aversion as a preference rather than a phobia, he maintains his absolute authority.
That makes perfect sense. He is dictating the terms of his own aversions. But the desk gets a curveball when Miss Bacon submits a deeply loaded question. She asks if the Hats, which is the archive's affectionate term for the host's deceased parents, would have liked her.
To drop a heavy hypothetical question about seeking the approval of dead parents into a segment about laundry filters and fried eggs is quite a pivot.
It really is. Yeah. And the host swats it away with staggering pragmatism. He refuses to entertain the hypothetical. He simply states that dead people don't opine.
Oh.
Yeah, they no longer have preferences. And this somehow leads to a geographical tangent about Patty Bacon living in Nidraba, which, as veteran listeners know, is just the word Abardon spelled backward, a classic quirk of this universe's map. He uses this to pivot into a discussion about the Bacon family's self-professed love for cemeteries.
The bureaucracy of the question desk forces him to confront these bizarre scenarios, but notice how he immediately grounds the morbid hypothetical into a geographic fact about Nidraba.
Yeah, but here is where my mind is blown. Amidst all this strict control, you know, the exact coupon math, the pedantic rulings on egg definitions, the literal tree binding, he introduces an element of pure, unadulterated chaos into the frugal fortress. He starts experimenting with an AI program called Suno to generate music.
A total surrender to the machine.
It is. He feeds the AI the 1982 World's Fair music and a track called Lucky Day USA, but he discovers a glitch. If he doesn't explicitly provide the AI with written lyrics, the program just hallucinates and defaults to Japanese or Chinese singing over the 1982 instrumental track.
That's wild.
Right. And instead of fixing it, he just plays this bizarre, hallucinated gibberish on the broadcast. I'm struggling to reconcile this. How does a man who channels a grumpy dead relative to secure a $2 egg discount feel totally fine relinquishing creative control to an unpredictable AI?
Because the frugal fortress requires safe zones for chaos. You have to look at the stakes. He micromanages the things that directly impact his survival, right? his finances, his physical hygiene, the structural integrity of his yard. But precisely because those essential pillars are locked down so tightly behind bamboo cutting boards and discounted insulation, he has earned the luxury of letting go in completely low-stakes areas.
So the AI music is a release valve.
Exactly. If the AI hallucination fails, it doesn't cost him $25 at Von's East, and it doesn't rot his teeth. It's just a funny sandboard noise. He is deliberately outsourcing his human need for unpredictability to a machine.
He builds the walls high so he can safely play with fire inside. I love that. And that outsourcing of unpredictability is the perfect bridge to our final segment. The ultimate release valve for all this strict domestic control is looking outward, both to the literal cosmos and to manufactured television drama.
The reality TV escape hatch.
The week actually culminates under the Sturgeon Moon, which is a full lunar eclipse named by Native Americans for the giant fish in the Great Lakes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he takes a moment to appreciate this massive, uncontrollable cosmic milestone happening above his roof. But the real milestone, the one that truly dictates the rhythm of his week and the layout of his frugal fortress. Well, it brings us to our second mandatory listener reminder of the day.
Say it with me. Big Brother is on Sunday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights on CBS.
Do not forget it, because the drama breakdown this week is spectacular. The franchise is celebrating its 1,000th supersized episode, and he gives his audience the full tactical rundown.
How about that?
Devens uses the diamond power of veto to completely blindside Camus. Camus is evicted and leaves the house entirely shirtless. A visual detail, the host notes, was very much to the audience's delight.
Naturally.
Then you have Angela winning this utterly bizarre grab tube battle. Later in the week, L.A. wins the power of veto and saves herself, which forces Dee to put up Mallory as the replacement nominee.
Mm-hmm.
And Mallory's reaction is famously described in the archive as being mad as a snake.
Mad as a snake. What a visceral, venomous description of human conflict.
It paints quite a picture. But look at the dynamic here. As I was going through the archive, I realized it's exactly like he is observing zoo animals.
Now so?
Well, he watches these reality TV contestants lose their absolute minds, blindsiding each other, screaming, be mad as snakes, getting evicted shirtless. And he's watching all of this from the pristine, locked-down, financially audited comfort of his frugal fortress.
That is the exact psychological mechanism at play. Reality television functions as a synthetic chaos simulator.
A synthetic chaos simulator. Break that down for me.
Think about his actual day-to-day life. He has aggressively eliminated almost all organic conflict. His biggest real-world problem this week was that a carton of eggs didn't ring up correctly, and he solved it with math and an orange hat.
Right.
But human beings are inherently wired for drama. We have a biological need for narrative tension. By piping Big Brother into his living room on Sunday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights, he gets to experience the adrenaline of betrayal, the thrill of the blindside, and the raw emotion of someone being mad as a snake without absorbing any of the actual risk.
He gets the high without the hangover.
Precisely. The manufactured madness of the reality show acts as a mirror. Watching Camus get blindsided makes the quiet predictability of his own life feel like a massive, hard-won victory. He can appreciate the silence of the frugal fortress because he can hear Mallory screaming on the television.
So mastering your microenvironment, you know, the tree girdles, the bamboo cutting boards, the strict coupon math, is exactly what generates the psychological safety required to actually enjoy macro chaos.
Yes.
Whether that chaos is a Sturgeon Moon eclipsing the night sky, an AI hallucinating Japanese lyrics over 1982 World's Fair music, or a shirtless eviction on Big Brother.
That perfectly synthesizes the entire through line of this week's archive. The junk drawer isn't random at all. The mundane receipts are what pay for the bandwidth to appreciate the 3D printed treasures. It is all about creating enough localized safety to actually enjoy the absurdity of existence.
And that brings us to the end of our journey through this specific drawer of the archive. But before we sign off, we want to leave you with a final, provocative thought to mull over as you go about your own routines this week.
A thought experiment about your own frugal fortress.
Exactly. Picture this. If someone were to take your last week and audit it down to the exact penny of your grocery receipt, track your every television viewing habit, and analyze the way you approach your most mundane household chores, what would the final picture look like?
Yeah.
Would you look like the eccentric, brilliant architect of your own carefully curated life? Or would you just look like someone desperately trying to hold back the tide of time with a handful of green twisty ties and some expiring Kohl's cash?
That is a question that will definitely linger the next time you're standing in the checkout aisle.
It really will. Thank you all so much for tuning in to this week's Ruination Repeat with us. I'm King.
And I'm Gail.
We invite you back right here for next Sunday's show as we continue to map out this beautifully messy universe. And of course, one final reminder before we go. Big Brother is on Sunday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights on CBS. See you next week.
We'll see you next Sunday here on Ruination Repeat.